Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Hi, it's Saturday, 29th of August, 2015. It's a week after the events of 22nd of August, 2015, the crash at the Shoreham Air Show. This is maybe a bit peripheral to the interest of the information, but it's something we saw at first hand and has a lot of ramifications for aviation, air shows, and anyone who flies or looks up at the skies or is interested in technology or the military, and anyone who follows these sorts of events, which we can hardly escape. They're in the news. It's been a big story. We just thought you'd like to have our angle on it. And we're sitting now on the bank of the River Ader. It's, what's the time now? It's getting into the evening, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 6:30.
Yeah, 6:30. And it's raining very gently. The tide's low. It's a kind of tidal estuary river. And we're just north, only by about 10 yards north of the... is that the Shoreham Toll
That's
Bridge?
That's the toll bridge,
yeah. The old, it's a very old wooden bridge in Shoreham.
I think it was built. The wooden bridge was built in 2008. It used to be a different design.
Right.
They rebuilt it.
It looks like something out of an ancient era.
It does, doesn't it?
You know, built out of wooden...
They did a good job. They wanted to keep it sort of looking historical and kind of ramshackle on it. It looks good. It's safe. It's a good bridge. It's sturdy.
Yeah, although this is a very rural riverside, tidal river scene, you will hear a rumble in the left side here. And that's the traffic on the mini spaghetti junction they built here many years ago.
Yeah,
but the main road, the A27, is closed at the moment because of this crash. And so maybe what we should do, just go back to last week and just say what we saw, how we witnessed this. It was quite strange, wasn't it, how it happened for us?
It was an odd day. I mean, we decided we would go to the air show together, just the two of us. And I think it was the first time you'd seen the air show, isn't it, Peter?
Yeah, I'd seen the planes coming over.
Yeah.
When I've been doing events nearby Worthing years ago, we used to have the Worthing Eco Festival, and they used to fly over there.
Yeah.
But I've not come to it specifically, no.
And then I think the main reason, the purpose, one of the purposes you had for the day was to record the Vulcan.
Yeah, which
I did. Some footage.
Despite everything.
Yeah, and I happen to live in Shoreham, and I'm actually less than a mile away from the crash site. So it's very local to me, and I've been to the air show on numerous occasions. And last year I even went into the RAF Association tent because I was a guest in there. I got an invite because of a friend of mine. I did some work with one of them, and they got on the guest list. So it was strange for me because I actually remember all of their faces, all the organisers of the event, the RAFA guys, and they're a great bunch, fantastic people. So it's kind of rung home to me more so perhaps because of that, I'm not entirely sure. But we set off from mine at about 12:30, and we were walking up the Ader on the riverside. Many people pay to get in, but also many people will watch it from the riverbank, which is a very good vantage point. So you don't necessarily need to pay to get into this air show. It's that sort of arrangement. Although there was a sign up, wasn't there, saying...
We're near here,
viewing aircrafts. You'll be prosecuted if you view aircraft.
Yes.
But at the time we both did think that was a bit of an odd sign, just because I felt it was a bit cruel really to say that to people.
I think it was only being on this bridge,
on that
this immediate
bridge,
area
just,
where
yeah.
we are now. Yeah,
I guess they would get people would congregate on the bridge.
They would,
So we set off and we caught a little bit of the morning show.
Yeah, we saw the parachutists coming down, didn't
yeah.
we?
Yeah.
We saw a little plane going up
Stump
in a spiral.
Plane. I think that was a remote control plane we saw.
Was it?
Perhaps. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of things we saw. But it was kind of like the tail end of the morning session.
Yeah.
And that ended at 12:30. And we decided to go for a bit of a walk. And we just happened to walk further up the river, and we actually went underneath the bridge.
Yeah, so we went past where we are now,
yeah.
and carrying on further about 200 yards to that.
Towards the actual A27. So we were actually underneath the road, where the incident occurred.
Yeah, we went a bit further up, didn't we? We did.
We worked it out that that was about, that would have been about half an hour before the incident.
Yes, it would have been, yeah.
So
Because I reckon it was an hour's sort of lunch break. We didn't have a programme, and I hadn't looked at the programme. Martin seemed to know more about it.
Well, basically the afternoon session was going to resume at 1:30.
Right, okay.
And I guess one interesting point is that it seemed to start early.
It said
on the website the afternoon session resumes at 1:30, and that's why we were still... So basically what happened is we went to the Red Lion pub, which is near the bridge.
Very near here, yeah.
And that was about 1 o'clock. And we decided we would stay there until 1:30, because that was the time we assumed the air show
was. That's right.
So one odd thing about this is that we were sitting there, and then about...
In the garden, weren't we? It's a very old medieval-y looking pub.
Yeah,
no ceilings.
It is. And at about 1:15, I guess, we saw... At first, I wrongly identified it as some American 60s
jet. We heard a noise, heard a rumble first, and we looked up, didn't we?
Yeah, and we saw the jet fly over, and now we know that that was actually the Hawk Hunter.
Yeah. It's a blue looking, it looked like a beautiful blue jet against a very blue sky.
Yes, and we drank up, and we decided we just assumed that it started early, and I did think at the time that's a little odd, because it's 15 minutes ahead of schedule.
Yeah, it was flying from the west towards the east.
Yeah.
So we think it turned round over Hove or somewhere further, you know, to the east than here, a few miles, and then it turned round and came back because it was flying very fast over to the east.
Yeah.
I think it came from Essex or somewhere originally, so it must have done a loop round and was going back that way.
Yeah. So we decided before leaving the pub, we basically used the loo in the pub.
Yeah.
And
well, this is where it gets strange. Yeah. I'm going to come back to this because something happened there, and I'm going to come back to it afterwards if you don't mind.
That's fine.
Because the way it worked is that we then came out of there, went through this very medieval-y pub, and you know, I was kind of in denial of my feelings, as it turned out. This woman stepped in. She says it's tragic, and I thought, what's she talking about?
And was that in the pub?
In the pub, as she came in as we were going out. So we came out, let me cross the road. It was quite quiet, no screaming or shouting.
No panic, looking towards
you know where it happened. We crossed the road to this riverbank, the opposite one to here. And we saw maybe a quarter of a mile away, a third of a mile away, some white smoke coming up. And I thought initially, oh, is that one of those sort of Battle of Britain type things where they have... you know, a smoke pot going off as fake bomb run or something like that, you know.
That's what I thought at first.
At first, I thought that. And then I noticed there was black smoke on the top of it as well. I thought, oh, no, black smoke, that's fuel. That's fuel smoke, that's not normal smoke. And then I think we were, oddly enough, we were still almost sort of in denial of seeing it. Mm. We carried on walking a bit, and you said, hold on, are we missing something? You seem to be clocking the faces.
Yeah, I started to clock that something was going down.
Yeah.
It was actually... The smoke, I thought, well, that's an incident. But it could have been anything. It could have been a fire. But I didn't register about the black smoke at first. But I think what triggered it for me was actually just the faces. Everyone was standing on the riverside, hundreds of people, all just in silence. And it wasn't the standard way people behave. I was expecting more movement, and when people were just standing still, I thought, okay, something's up. And then I overheard a woman with their partner or friend, whoever it was, just make a comment along the lines of, it's so tragic. So it was actually pretty much the same terminology that you heard somebody else used. And then that's when I said to you, I think we're missing something here.
That's right, and we turned back then to look at it, didn't we?
We stood beside a bush, and... Yeah.
The smoke actually died down for a while, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And
so I think this is after the fireball. The fireball, we missed that. Did we come out and see the smoke after the fireball?
Yeah, we didn't see it. We just saw the smoke. And then two things, basically. The first is that at first I figured, well, it's tragic, but it's probably a small aircraft, like one of the early afternoon aircrafts.
Yeah.
And I thought it's probably just gone down in a field, and I suspect the pilot bailed.
Yeah.
So it basically all of the best case scenarios you can come up with for an air show crash.
Do you think we meant to block in the thing? Probably. That's the best case scenario.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, at that point, we weren't thinking in terms of, well, that was the Hawker Hunter that we saw earlier.
No.
Which was a jet, and obviously they're more dangerous because of the amount of fuel they have. But also the other thing I wanted to mention at this stage is that it was interesting because at that precise moment, my phone was vibrating in my pocket and I just checked it thinking it was a text from somebody, and I'd missed three calls from our sister, and I'd had two text messages, one from her and one from our nephew, and the text read, I've still got it saved, it reads, has a plane crashed at Shoreham Airshow, and about five question marks. And I thought, right, and then I realised, I remembered they were up on the South Downs, up on Devil's Dyke.
Yeah,
that's where they were at that precise moment.
A few miles away.
And they happened to see the aircraft go down from that vantage point. Yeah. And I think our sister even took a picture of it, but
black,
it would have been
smoke coming up, but quite distant. Yeah.
And even from that vantage point, they knew something was up, and that was when it absolutely registered that the plane's crashed. Mm. And then we both realised at that point what had happened. And from that point then on, it was a case of us basically trying to absorb as much information as possible with regards to what had happened. So I hit Twitter very quickly. And it's events like this, it's invaluable really, having access to a smartphone with internet access. A lot of people were saying in the air show that they couldn't get a signal because of the amount of people trying to do something similar.
That's right.
But somehow for me, on the other side of the river, it seemed okay. I checked Twitter and it was flooded with people mentioning about the plane crash, and that was when it hit.
What accounts were they on? Were they on news accounts?
No, these were individual accounts. The media hadn't picked up the story at that point. It was too early.
So they probably got it from these, didn't they?
Yeah. And people were saying about the Hawker Hunter, and that was when I realised, well, that was the aircraft we'd seen earlier. It was the Hawker Hunter.
Yeah, that's right.
And then it started to become apparent on Twitter that what people were saying about the road, saying it's hit the road, the A27. And I think that's when we both realised the seriousness.
Yeah, because we'd walked down by that stage a little bit further down south along the river to a spot we'd found earlier that was quite good for watching, about opposite the control tower, actually.
Yeah.
And we had some binoculars. And we did debate it, and then we decided, I mean, Martin's the expert on this stuff, but to do a periscope video or coverage of it, kind of as we were talking about it like this, but knowing a lot less than we know now.
Yeah, it was a decision I made based on the fact that we weren't there was no form of self-promotion going on. It was just a case of trying to provide information to people about what was happening. And we were nowhere near the scene. But we decided mainly for audio purposes, as opposed to visual. And for those that don't know, Periscope's a new app made by Twitter that's very interesting. It allows you to just do live broadcasts from wherever you are, and it uses your phone's camera and microphone, and you just specify where you are and what the title of the Periscope session is. And as soon as you broadcast, it tweets that you're doing it, so people kind of tap into it. And we just did it because we wanted to say, this is what's happening and this is what we know. And it was quite overwhelming, really. Within the 3 or 4 minutes, we had over 200 people viewing the Periscope.
Yeah, we just had the whole, held the thing up, giving a very general view with the smoke. By that stage, the smoke had then billowed up again, because although it had gone down completely, a helicopter did come and look at it. And I was doing a bit of camcorder filming as well, and looking through some binoculars, which were much better quality. And then the smoke flared up again, and it was really burning, a very, very
really
black
wild
cloud.
And we both said that we were both getting quite concerned at the ferocity of the fire. It seemed like it was out of control.
Yeah.
But what we didn't realise was the amount of emergency services that had already arrived.
Yeah.
They
really couldn't see them behind trees.
No. They really did respond quickly. Both East and West Sussex emergency services, fire brigades, police, and obviously ambulance services, paramedics. And the police helicopter was hovering overhead for a long time. And funnily enough, that's based at Shoreham Airport. That's one of its operational bases, I think. Mm. And also, I think the Coast Guard helicopter flew in, and I think some other helicopter. There were at least three helicopters.
I did video some of them.
Yeah.
I need to try and identify some of them later on. That's another issue.
Sure.
So I'm trying to put together a short film about this. but I didn't have some of the soundtrack on the my video that I was filming, because I was kind of talking to Martin for Periscope while taking some shots on my camcorder, and so our sound came out on the camcorder, so I may use some of that on the film, but some of what we said wasn't quite accurate. But it was kind of, at the time, we didn't quite know what was going on entirely.
No.
But the thing I wanted to come back to about the toilets, that we said, it's a bizarre place to be when this happens. I said on the video, which I will put up on YouTube eventually, we didn't hear a thing. We're in the toilets, we didn't hear a thing. I said this. I don't know what your recollection of this is, Martin. And then about a day later, I thought, oh no, we heard a very slight rumble, didn't we? And I was back at work on Monday, and I still thought it was a slight rumble. Then Tuesday evening, I was going home, and I was stopped in the street about 7 o'clock at night, and I was really quite upset. And I said, no, what am I talking about? We did hear it. We heard it really loud. We heard it incredibly loud. And in fact, I knew at the time it was a crash. What I was in the toilet, I've done whatever you do in there. I was washing my hands, then I heard this sort of rumble of jet coming over. I thought it was flying over really low. And then there was a sort of almost a thunder noise in there, really loud. I was just washing my hands, and it sort of, then another rumble dying down. And I went, oh no, like that. So I was washing my hands, and my heart sunk. I thought, that's something's happened there, right, isn't it? But I don't know why psychologically I was washing my hands at the exact moment. Maybe it mentally cleansed it from me. I don't know. It's really bizarre. And I actually forgot. And as we walked through the pub, we met that woman saying it's tragic. By then, I'd forgotten that happened completely.
Yep.
And by the time we went out and we were doing that video we just talked about, the Periscope one, I was actually saying completely honestly, we didn't hear anything. We were in there. We saw it come over.
Yep.
We didn't hear anything. Mm. I actually blotted it out. And I don't know whether it was something like what we were saying earlier about you tried to reach for the nicest explanation.
Yeah.
But I literally blotted it out, and it took about 3 days for it to come back. And then I remember, no, I not only did hear it very loud, I actually, at the time, thought it was some sort of crash.
Yeah, and the more you discuss that moment, the more I start to actually remember some sort of thud or sound of thunder. There was a noise of some description, and I kind of remember hearing it as well.
Yeah, it's not like a dynamite explosion. It's not a bang,
sure,
or firework. It's a more of a thump, big thundery thump.
Yeah.
And we were indoors, so you're muffled a bit as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, a little bit away, maybe a quarter to a third of a mile away, but this sound carried a long way.
Yeah.
It must have been incredibly loud if you were near it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But it's loud enough, and I thought, that is not right, you know, when I heard it. That's not right. That's not
something. It just didn't sound like the kind of noise that you would usually hear. It there was something alien about the noise.
Yeah.
It wasn't a noise that would be caused by anything, really, that you could account for.
Like,
a car crash isn't loud like that.
No.
Thunder just has a certain sound to it that isn't the same.
The nearest is to thunder, but much lower, and
yeah,
you know, like it was happening really nearby.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then once that happens, and we realised what we were dealing with, we were sitting on the riverside. We had a vantage point doing at the Periscope session, which lasted about 20 minutes. I think that's how long we were broadcasting for. At some point during that period, I don't think it was during the Periscope session, I think it was just before, the Vulcan flew over. Mm. And this, at first, because we had a pair of high-power binoculars, as Peter's mentioned, and they were very useful on the day in terms of us being able to see what was going on.
Yeah.
Peter mentioned that he saw a jet coming in from the west, and at first we were both a bit unsure if it was anything to do with the air show.
Yeah, like a thin line with a little dot in the middle.
Yeah.
It was coming straight towards us.
And then I had a quick look with the binoculars, and I realised it was a Vulcan, because it was a delta wing.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to spot the Vulcan when you know what you're looking at, because it's a huge aircraft. It's a 50s era bomber, a nuclear bomber, and it was Britain's only nuclear way of basically distributing a nuclear payload during the Cold War, because we didn't have the nuclear subs in those days. And anyone that knows about aircraft and goes to air shows knows about the Vulcan. It's the big event of any air show, really. And it is sadly kind of being decommissioned, I think. I don't think it's going to fly for much longer, because they can no longer... It's no longer viable, sadly, I think is the gist of it. But we knew it was flying over. It was heading towards the airport. And at first, I reacted a bit bit sort of hostile to the. I thought, well, they can't carry on the air show. They can't resume the air show because we weren't in the air show. We weren't hearing the live updates from the commentators in the show, and in subsequent YouTube videos I've watched, they were keeping everybody up to date with what was going on, and they made it very clear that it was just going to come in and do a solemn flyover as a mark of respect to those that have, well, maybe died, because no one actually knew at that point.
Yeah, that's right.
And we realised that pretty quickly. I mean, it came in, it just did a very slow, quite low, solemn fly past and was gone. That was it. It just flew off to the north and was gone, flew over the downs, goodbye. And it was very poignant, and it was very sad, for a very moving moment. And it did make me quite emotional. I was actually quite teary-eyed, actually, if I'm honest, on that particular moment, because... Mm. For two reasons, really. It did feel very significant and poignant, but also it was the knowledge that I had, and many people at the air show had, that Vulcan, that was the last time that was ever going to fly over Shoreham Airport, because this is the last year it's going to be flying, and this was the only show it had on its books on that day. So, yeah, it was a very moving moment. And obviously the crew of that Vulcan made a conscious decision they knew what had happened. They obviously were informed over radio.
Yeah, I think they circled over Littlehampton for a little while, over Littlehampton or near Littlehampton,
right,
for a while, and then to keep itself,
yep,
in the air while they decided what to do, and then...
It just did one flyover.
It did pass and over, yeah.
There's a very good video of it on YouTube. Somebody filmed it on Mill Hill, which we're looking at now as we do this broadcast. Mm. And that's a very good vantage point. And they did a very nice video that I linked to on social media, because they added a nice bit of music, respectable music, a good respectable job. And it just basically saying, yeah, the Vulcan kind of just flew over. Because the vantage point they had, it showed the Vulcan flying, and in the backdrop you saw all the emergency services,
right,
dealing with the
yeah,
crash.
Sure.
So it's a very powerful video.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And yeah, it was gone. And then at that point, we realised the severity of the situation, because I had a conversation with our sister, and she'd heard that there were casualties. And at first, I think it was two cyclists.
Mm,
the Lance, apparently, the Lancing,
yeah,
Herald, I think it is, or a Lancing-based newspaper,
yeah,
was saying about two cyclists being killed. And then I'm not entirely sure what he got the cyclist part of that from. Who knows?
This is what we got anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was what we heard.
And then, it became obvious. Twitter really was what was driving our intel, and Twitter's very useful for live events as they unfold, if you want to be informed of what's happening. And we realised there were fatalities, and we realised it hit the A27, and yeah, it was very grim at that point. And people were leaving it en masse as well at that point. We saw an exodus of people leaving on both sides of the river.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we didn't notice it, but they couldn't have left if they had a vehicle at the time. They had to wait till, I think it was 10 in the evening on the same day, until the airport allowed them to leave. They had to create a designated exit,
yeah,
that wasn't near the A27. So there was in terms of logistics, it was a very challenging day for thousands of people. But there's nothing that could have been done about that, because it hit the A27, it hit a major dual carriageway.
Yeah, yeah.
Which it's like a motorway, essentially, in the UK.
Yeah. So we went back to your place briefly, didn't we, and saw some of it on TV.
I think that was
the next stage for us.
Because I'm only a 5-minute walk from the incident, and we were back at mine, and we saw the news. It was the top head story on every channel, and we saw the footage for the first time, properly saw it. We actually went to the Red Lion off before that, didn't we?
We went back to the pub, actually, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right, I forgot about that. We sat in the front this time, outside.
Yeah.
And we're just watching various
it, really.
Bands arriving from the media, which is still there.
ICN,
right,
yeah.
Now, I can see them from here. You know, they've been here a week, I think, or here on and off. I haven't been here since the week.
They have been here a week.
Yeah,
I've been coming and going all week to the bridge from mine and seeing the media. I went up to Mill Hill on the Sunday as well to get an idea of the vantage point, to sort of monitor the situation with the binoculars, just to see what was going on. And there were lots of media up there and people coming and going, taking a look. But I don't really know why I did that, if I'm honest. It wasn't sort of voyeuristic. It was more just, it felt like I needed to be around the scene. Many people had the opposite effects, and they didn't want to be anywhere near it. They left Shoreham, they left the area for a day or two.
Residency.
They did, yeah. Really? A friend of mine, a work colleague, they felt the need to get out of town because they kept hearing the sirens. Because that's one thing that you would only know about if you live in the area, but the sirens have been constant all week, coming and going. The police are still using their blues and twos to get to the crash site. I guess they just need to get there quickly because the traffic situation is quite horrific at the moment because of the closure of the road. But I had the opposite. I wanted to be near for some odd reason, so I went up to Mill Hill and had a look. I was up there for about 2-3 hours, and there was a character up there who was very interesting. Because on the Sunday, because this was Sunday morning, no one really. The death toll was at 7, and there were people were hoping that that was going to be it. But the guy I met up there, he claimed to be an ex-RAF air traffic control operator. And he claimed he said his son was one of the first responders, and a police officer, and they were actually at the scene. And he was up on Mill Hill with a very, very powerful camera, a high power, serious piece of kit he has. And he said to me, "Well, I can let you know this, but my intel is that 10 people have died. And the reason they have said 7 is because it's taking them a very long time to even finds." I mean, he was talking in terms of ashes. He was talking. He wasn't talking in terms of bodies. He was saying that some of the victims, there was no body. It was all about forensic teams finding ashes in bushes, and which is a horrific thing to imagine. But the heat we're talking about here is immense with jet fuel. And he said that it would go up to 10, and then lo and behold, it did go up to 10. About 3 o'clock on that day, there was a press conference, and it was 11, in fact. It went up to 11, and they confirmed it on the day.
And it seems to stuck at 11, doesn't it? It was told it might be higher, but it seems to stuck at 11.
Yes, they were worried about the air. When they really brought a crane in on the Monday, they were worried that once they raised the aircraft up using the crane, there would be more bodies, but luckily there weren't any signs of any further bodies. And
today it's been this bridge has got full of flowers, hasn't it? We've just been across it about half an hour ago, and we're still looking at it right now. It's obviously it's getting a bit cooler into the evening.
It's raining a little bit. It's quite windy. It's not too windy, actually. No, it's quite calm, actually.
Getting a bit of almost a sunset coming through, actually, a bit of yellowy sun behind the bluish clouds, but it's been a very grey day. I was down here early for the 1 minute silence at 1:20, or just before 1:20, the exact moment it happened. They had a band play
The Last Salute.
The Last Salute, is it called?
Yeah.
And that was nice for a minute, and they played a little end reprise of that. And then it actually started raining at that point, incredibly on cue, for about 5 minutes.
After the 1 minute silence.
Yeah, just bang on, like it was crying almost for the event. That was strange. It never quite got bright again. It was quite hot this morning. It never quite brightened up again either today. And still people walking across the bridge even
loads
now
of people,
looking
at
it, but it's thinned out, obviously, a lot. It was very crowded earlier, and lots of media on there, TV.
Overwhelming amounts of media around.
Yeah, to the point of being a bit in your face, to be honest, at some point.
I agree,
I think the number of TV cameras...
Sometimes I think they need to just assign one crew to just do it for all of the channels.
They could have done that, they could have done that.
They could just use the same footage, but then they'd argue about who the presenter was, and it's a difficult one. But I've been coming and going all week because I live near the area, and it's been interesting seeing the amount of flowers increase as each day goes by. And I was here when the first set went down on the Sunday on the toll bridge, and ever since it's just been a mass flood of flowers and people coming and going. And I think by the end of, I predict certainly by the end of this week, the whole bridge will be covered in flowers on both sides, because they're starting to do the other side of the bridge now, and they started on the north facing side of the bridge, and that's completely covered now.
For practical purposes, it was quite nice because you could walk across,
yes,
and then you could stand on the other side. I think it worked very well how they've done it, but
let's just hope the flowers, it stays that way for a few more days.
Yeah,
at least.
So they've got a shelf life, obviously, but the rain's helping them, I guess.
Yeah, and some I think people probably are coming and going with even more.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a shrine up there. It's very moving, and there's lots of poems and notes.
Yeah, some candles have been lit this evening as well. There's going to be a candlelit vigil later on, which we're going down to.
That's in half an hour.
We're going to walk down to that later.
I've been studying, the video footage online is very alarming and difficult to watch, but I did really obsess about it on the Monday and Tuesday, and I had to draw a line on Tuesday and stop, and I haven't watched any since. But we have found some very interesting footage that I think it's known about, and I'm sure the Air Accident Investigation Branch are looking at it. One is of the aircraft taking off from Essex, the airfield in Essex, and the guy that filmed that is certain it's the same aircraft, and he seems to have done his homework in terms of the timings. He's pretty certain it was the Hawk Hunter taking off.
If that is a Hawk Hunter, it would have to be that one, I think, if there's any doubt.
And it does look like it's a bit of a laboured takeoff, and that's what he's saying in the video, and I think that was why he uploaded it. And it looks like it, but then other people on the comments section of YouTube who seem to know what they're talking about, sometimes you can tell when somebody genuinely does just by the way they word their comment. They seem to think it's quite common for jets of that era to use up the whole runway to take off, whereas other people are saying no, it looked very laboured, like it was struggling to get up in the air. I would have thought though that the pilot Andy Hill, who's a very seasoned RAF, ex-RAF Harrier pilot, would have known not to fly the aircraft if it was dodgy from the outset. He would have just landed it and said, no, I'm afraid I can't make the air show. The other video we've seen that's of interest is what looks like perhaps a flash as the aircraft's doing a loop, doing its final manoeuvre, which is the loop it never got out of.
As it goes up into it.
Yeah.
And it's sort of upside down, isn't it? Or nearly upside down. There's a flash on one of the wings. Seems to be. It's one of those things you look at and it's like UFO footage.
Yeah.
You kind of go, well, it could be that, but it could be a flare in the lens.
Yes.
But it seems to be only one frame. I mean, I haven't gone through it on an editing program.
I've skipped it at the exact frames, paused it, I mean.
Oh, you have? I wasn't able to do it.
It kind of looks like it might be sun glare.
Yeah.
It's difficult to know for sure. But the theory is it might be a engine flame out, so the engine's just basically stopped, and as he's come out of the loop he's got no power, so there's nothing he could have done. So perhaps. I mean, it may be years until we know, because the hurricane crash in 2007, which occurred at Shoreham Air Show in 2007, the Hawker hurricane, that was obviously a tragic incident, but only the pilot was killed and he landed in a field. But it took 2 years for the Air Accident Investigation Branch in the UK to actually release their findings, and they published a report, a very lengthy report, on why that had occurred.
Right.
And they really did seem to pinpoint it down to a precise mechanical failure in the hurricane.
Okay.
So I think they really can get to the bottom of this once they've analysed the
remains. They've taken the wreck, haven't they, to Farnborough?
Yeah.
They tried to put the bits back together, not literally, but in a sense laying them out in the formation of a plane, and they're trying to work out, back engineer where it went wrong.
And obviously Andy Hill is still with us, thankfully, although he's in a very critical state in hospital in Brighton.
No, he's been moved from Brighton.
He's been moved now,
to an undisclosed unit somewhere.
Specialist unit, okay. He is still alive, so the hope is that he does eventually make a recovery. And first and foremost, he's able to recover, but also eventually he may be able to shed some light on what actually did happen and what went wrong.
He did seem to be fighting to pull the nose up at the end, and he did succeed to a large degree. The nose was up.
Yeah.
In fact, he very nearly pulled out of it. Just another 10 or 15 feet altitude, he might just have scraped the top of a car and got away with it.
He may have bailed and then been okay.
No, he can't eject, actually.
He can't eject.
No, the reason is that someone told me the other day they don't have powered ejector seats on these old planes.
Okay.
They don't have rockets to shoot them out, so you can only do an altitude where the plane's just going to fall away below you. So you couldn't have done it; it'd have just opened the The lid did seem to be open in the photograph.
Yes.
So I don't know whether he was about to try that anyway, just to literally... But probably. You don't go up high enough to have a parachute. It might just flip you out and you fall over. I don't know how it would have worked. But no, you don't have the rocket-powered ejectors as you get in monoplanes.
Right.
And ejecting is very dangerous. You could break your neck shooting out of a plane anyway. It's not a safe thing. It's a real last resort, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they're now saying about air shows in the future in the UK that they've immediately banned high power, I think they describe them as, manoeuvres by vintage jets, and that's in over land, not over sea though, but over land, and that's currently a sort of semi-permanent measure, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And then they're going to release their findings and make an official update to the guidelines that govern air shows in the UK.
And they're doing an interim report very soon.
Right.
If they haven't already. Just the basic findings of what happened. I think all that is like an incident report to just say this is what we observed to happen in absolute clarity that you can't deny in terms of time and what actually happened, but it doesn't explain the why or the how. It's the what, but very clearly set out.
Yep.
So I think that's a standard thing they always do, apparently. So that's something to look out for, but it won't be the same as an inquiry.
No, sure. And these things may take time. And also the Hawker Hurricane itself has been grounded, so that can't fly. I think that was due to fly today, actually, at a separate air show, and apparently it's been replaced by some Yat, which is a Russian stunt aircraft.
But it's probably the Wings and Wheels Festival, possibly.
Could be, yeah. But the Hawker Hurricane is a fantastic aircraft, and it was one of Britain's most successful exports, apparently, in terms of military equipment. Mm. It's still flown to this very day by the Lebanese military, operationally.
Well, this is a 65-year-old aircraft.
It is, yeah. You know. But it's a very capable aircraft, and just because it's old doesn't mean that it's unsafe. And it was very well maintained.
They've got to be as good as new, virtually, to allow them to fly.
Yeah.
So absolutely. What happened could have happened to a brand new one, possibly. It may just be some freak thing, but you just couldn't predict.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think we should speculate.
No.
I don't think we are, but it was just on those videos we've pointed to.
They're
two
just some interesting thing. I mean, the other interesting thing I found very, very obscurely, there's a website I sometimes frequent, the forum, conspiracy forum. So I didn't really give it much attention, but sometimes you get the odd intelligent comment on there, and somebody mentioned that apparently the Hawker Hurricane is the first aircraft to ever have a fly-by-wire mechanism installed, which essentially means it can be controlled remotely. And I'm not saying that that's what I think happens, but it's just an interesting fact to note, really. And the claim on the forum is that there was a fight that the pilot was trying to kind of take back control of the jet, but I think I'm not really convinced by that, but it's interesting to note that technically the Hawker Hunter could be remote controls, fly by wires available, so it can be like taken over remotely and flown. Yeah. It's just interesting to note that, but they're also. I think that was pretty much. I mean, there was a lot of interest online in America. It's been a big story as well because airshow crashes are always dramatic. But I think really the thing I take away from it more than anything else is just the fact that when something like this happens on your doorstep, it's extremely traumatic because it's horrible seeing this sort of thing happen anywhere. But when it's less than a mile away from where you live. Or just in your county or town, it just rings home, really. It sort of, you realise how life is fragile and how things can happen, unplanned events that you would never see coming from a million miles away. Mm. They just happen in a flash, and lives are lost in extremely dramatic ways. And I mean, I have solace in the fact that I, based on lots of reading and research I've done over the years, I'm pretty convinced. I don't know the form of it, but I'm pretty convinced that we do go on after death, in some form. And that's really all I say when people ask me the question. I don't talk about souls and I don't talk about anything. I just believe that consciousness is some sort of separate, it's somehow separate to body and mind. That's all I can really say. That's just how I perceive reality. So I have solace in that fact when you see an event like this unfold, and all the memorials to the people that have died, I like to think that they are somehow still with us, conscious, and their consciousness has sort of moved on.
Yeah, I just don't know what they would have experienced in terms of knowing what happened, whether they have any comprehension of it afterwards, beyond being alive and being able to look at the scene.
Does memory sort of exist?
I think it would, because there's no point having a life otherwise, because all that is to get experience of living in a world of finite capability to give you experience, is what I understand incarnation's meant to be about, from various talks we've been to over the years and things we've read. So you get, whether there's reincarnation or not, I don't know about that. But in terms of having a life and then getting something from it, if there is infinite kind of malleability in a spiritual realm, you haven't got any structure. And I believe that incarnation is in many ways about coming against physical matter and having to do things in a way that's finite. The clock's ticking, you've only got 60 or 80 years to do things in. You can get damaged, you can get ill. It's a bit like a game with rules which put limitations on you, and it's how well you get through it, whether you have a good time or a bad time. And at the end, you've got whatever you got out of it, and that's beyond what we can say here. But I think to have that lesson, I think you'd have to remember what happened, at least in another realm. If there's a reincarnation, I think that you maybe have the essence of it, but you don't have the literal remembrance of it. Otherwise, you would just keep remembering a past life 100 years ago, and it would be very distracting to be able to have a new experience. So I don't know what they would... we won't go into individuals, but if you were just there and you were basically wiped out in a second, whether you would actually then look down on the scene and perceive it as seconds later what's actually going on, or whether you would just be departed from it and then sort of know of it, I just don't know. Certainly I think in terms of their own deaths physically, it would have been very quick. They may have had a slight sense of something coming towards them, and your nervous system probably doesn't even give you the sensation of the pain before it would have been wiped out.
The endorphins, the body just unloads them, and trying to suppress pain, so it all would happen in a flash. I mean, I guess it's not good, but one thing that is good to know is this would have been quick. I mean, I don't think there are any reports of horrific injuries.
No, I think you either survive this one or you don't.
Yes, it was a clear-cut case of
pretty much
killed or just slightly wounded, in terms of maybe a bit of debris hitting you.
Yeah, I mean, there could be some burns and stuff, I don't know, but I think it's so fatal that if you're in that zone, you're going to go.
There's a kill zone, and if you're in it, you're gone. Yeah. If you're not, you're walking away. And the police described it as walking wounded, which is a commonly used phrase for this sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think there were 14 people who were wounded. They were treated within the same day. I think they were released from hospital the same day, and they're not severely wounded. The only person who's critically injured is the pilot, Andy Hill, who remains in a critical condition.
Mm. It's incredible he survived, isn't it?
It is.
Yes. I hope he can handle it if he does have an ability to understand what happened, because he may not ever awake. We just don't know. I don't think we'll speculate on that, but if he has a rational ability to read through the newspapers afterwards and see the videos, it's going to be shocking for him. It's going to be very hard to cope.
It will be very
I doubt he'll ever fly again. He'll probably be severely disabled at best.
Yes.
I mean, you know, without knowing the injuries.
Well, the burns could be quite severe.
Yeah.
I mean, but let's hope he pulls through and he's okay. One interesting point you made, Peter, when we were just on the bridge earlier, was that we know of the identities of 6 of the 11 who were killed, and they all seem to share a kind of archetypal personality trait that they all seem similar in a way. Like they're males, the ages vary, but there seems to be a uniformity about them in terms of their backgrounds. Or
I think the phrase I used, used to be a comic in the 50s called Boy's Own, and they're all kind of good British types, so
yes.
Footballers and military men and plane spotters and an ex-guardsman.
Yes.
You know, they're not someone, no disrespect, but someone just going down the road to get their shopping and coming home. That's as far as we know at the moment. But it struck me everybody who's died in this has been someone very respectable with a kind of very traditional kind of thing that they do. You know, a very upstanding citizen, you might say.
Yeah.
Which is...
it's just an interesting observation, isn't it?
It struck me.
And sometimes you kind of, just the way the nature of reality works, you kind of wonder if events attract, I mean, obviously air shows attract people into air shows and military, perhaps ex-military, into military hardware. But air show, the thing is air shows attract all types under the sun were at the air show, not just males of a certain age. It was everyone, families. So it's just an observation. It's one of those things. You kind of wonder sometimes if there's an element of fate to life, really. Mm. I guess that's really what we're getting at with this. It's kind of, it's a whole fate card.
Well, you know, I mean, we went to a talk a while ago, which we didn't put on the information, but a story was told about James Dean, which I've heard before, I read it in a book before, when James Dean bought a sports car in the 50s. The actor Alec Guinness saw the car, because Alec Guinness was in America at the time. James Dean showed him the car, and Alec Guinness said to James Dean, "If you get in that car, I promise you within a week you'll be dead." James Dean got in the car, look what happened, he died in it.
Yeah.
And that was years before Alec Guinness played Obi-Wan Kenobi or anybody, you know.
Yeah.
So in a weird way, Alec Guinness had a bit of psychic intuition there. But the thing is, James Dean is a legend now. Would he have been a legend if he hadn't died in a car crash? That's a talk for another day, maybe.
Yeah.
But he never had a declining elderly career, you know, and no one's going to be forgotten who died here. I mean, that particularly the driver seems to have been an iconic character in the Daimler.
Yes.
The older guy who...
ex-military guy, ex-police officer as well.
Seems to be incredibly well-respected.
Yeah.
And it seems to have really caught a nerve in the media. That's not to denigrate anyone else or anybody who just happened to be passing by. I mean, who knows, we could have walked down there ourselves. We'd actually gone under the road earlier.
We were half an hour away from that location, and in terms of timelines, if half an hour earlier, we would have been very, very close.
Just the time it came down, it's a slice of time. You could slice that time a minute later, 10 minutes later, be a different selection. Every bit as worthy, you know. We can only judge who we're hearing about, but that's the way it is. You can only look at what happens, not what the alternate reality scenario was. I mean, the plane could have not crashed, it would have carried on, we would have had a good day, the guy would have got to the wedding, everything else would have happened.
Yeah.
You know, it still would have been a memorable day, you know. That's the way it is.
Well, there's still a lot for us to digest about the day, but I think for now we're gonna carry on over to the candlelight vigil, which starts in about 10 minutes' time.
Okay, it's quite a walk, Martin, yeah.
Yeah.
The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
By way of a bonus, really, for this episode, we've decided to also include the audio of our original Periscope broadcasts, which we put out live during the airshow crash on the 22nd of August 2015. So there were two broadcasts. The first only lasted a few minutes, and then we paused it for various reasons, and then we resumed it once we had more of a handle on the situation. So the following audio is from that Periscope session. The sound quality isn't great because of the fact that the bit rate was heavily reduced, because Periscope broadcasts video and audio live. I had quite a week
mobile phone signal at the time, was doing it through 4G. And it's worth noting that when we were broadcasting this, we were far away from the crash site. It wouldn't have been appropriate to do this if we had been very close. I think we would have been more concerned with helping people if we were in any way able to. But we felt that it was important to perhaps record events as they were unfolding. And at one point we had over 200 viewers. So this certainly got an audience. And really, just for historical record, really, we've decided to include it in this episode. So here is the Periscope audio.
There's black smoke and white smoke coming up from the air crash at Shoreham Airport. We're looking with binoculars over the River Adur.
Camera to the sort of the air show itself. There were still people going on the rides and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
But you've got children there.
Yeah,
you've got
of course.
Crowd control. You know, they've got to contain the event. I'm worried where that came down. It must be a civilian area. It's outside the air show perimeter.
It's near Ricardo's, which is a motor testing facility for motor cars.
Yeah, and again, through the binoculars, this is behind a sort of green building that's corrugated iron. Probably a farm building, perhaps?
I mean, there's a pub there called the Sussex Pads, which is just to the right of the smoke.
Yeah, no, that's the Lancing College, that building you see, Mike, and I can see that from the binoculars. But the Sussex Pad is a bit further.
The Sussex Pad's right by the smoke. Right by the smoke.
You can hear sirens to the right, which are probably fire trucks coming in from Brighton and Hove. Probably a major incident been declared, perhaps. You see the context here, there's the river, there's the town we're in, in East Sussex. I'll just go back right, but I want to just give you the sense of the scale of the area where these planes were coming doing the stunts.
The thing about the Hawker Huntsman is because it's a jet, unlike a World War II era plane, a Hurricane, it's probably going to have more fuel.
That's right, so that's interesting. So the fuel could be burning off.
I guess so, yeah.
Yes, at the moment. And that's Lancing College to the right, that Gothic building you may be able to see. But again, we can't zoom in on here, I'm sorry about that.
There's a lot of drama going on in the tower.
So we're looking with binoculars over here to give you a little bit more. That's Shoreham Airport over there, you can see. And the control tower is to the right. Not a big building, it's an Art Deco building.
Yeah, you can't see it without magnification.
No, I'm sorry about the car.
There's probably around 10 or so people in the tower at the moment, just sort of keeping an eye on what's happening.
Again, that smoke is quite large there, dissipating a bit, but still quite visible. And you see there down on the right.
Yeah, we're back then. So this is, we're overlooking the Shoreham Airport from the river. You may have just seen our previous broadcast, we just had to put it on hold for a minute there. But yeah, we've since found out that it was actually a worse crash than we thought at first. It actually hit several cars, according to some news reports, BBC news reports. So there's a dual carriageway near here called the A27, and it looks, apparently the Hawker Huntsman actually crashed, perhaps even on the road itself, but we're not sure about that. But it actually did hit several cars, and police have declared it as a serious emergency situation.
Major incident.
Major incident. So yeah, that's, and what's kind of strange is we just saw the Vulcan fly over, and I got the impression that it kind of was quite a solemn flyover.
It did one pass, I don't think it's coming back. I've got it on the video here. It did one pass over, and it's gone off now to the north.
Yeah, the Vulcan's disappeared.
Northeast. Yeah, I don't think it's coming back. But what was strange, I was looking at this airport here, what you've just shown you, and I was looking through the binoculars, and I saw something that looked like a very flat plane. I said, that's a Delta wing or something, and surely that's a Vulcan. And a friend here said, no, it can't be, they won't be doing that. And then I said, well, this thing's been flying for hours, it's going to come over, it can't really
you've got to do something with it. And then it did come over, we saw it come over, so it's kind of strange.
But it was sort of a solemn flyover. I think it was out of a mark of respect.
Yeah.
Because the Vulcan is the main event of the air show, and it just did a very solemn flyover, very slow.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's coming back.
Don't think so, no.
Not 100% sure about that. But
I was going to look at this smoke in for the rocket. So as you said, the actual plume has gone down a lot since we were last filming.
But yeah, perhaps they've got the fire under control
now.
There's
still white smoke coming up there, you'll see in the centre of the image. And I'm looking through binoculars as I speak. It's billowing up quite a lot still. There's still some sustained fire going on. Again, the difference between black and white smoke is something we might need to understand here. Is the black smoke fuel smoke and the white smoke another kind of smoke? Because black smoke really is some sort of ignition of a fuel, from what I would understand, whereas sure. white smoke is almost like a normal fire. So whether we're looking at something they're burning, an actual wreckage burning, horrible to think of, but the plane would be metallic. There would be other things in it, cables, seating, etc.
Yeah.
That's
the train going by. Yeah. So apparently the pilot didn't eject, but they were pulled from the rubble. There's no pulled from. Yeah, yeah. So there's no indication yet about the state of the pilot.
But no. Again, we see the road itself is invisible to us from this angle. We're looking straight across, but there are buildings and bushes and stuff in the way, so the smoke is really indicating to us where this happened, to the left of this Lancet College building, which is near the Sussex Pad pub, but again isn't the Sussex Pad pub. And this is a very busy road. This is the trunk road along the south coast of England, the A27. It's a kind of a bypass, really. So it's a very major dual carriageway. So if it has hit that, we can expect that to be quite a busy road today with this event going on. So
yeah, well, it hits
we may be seeing
several,
fire coming
several
from
cars,
a vehicle
apparently.
Because we can't see where the fire's coming from. It could be coming from a vehicle, or it could have been coming from the plane itself. It's all originating from that spot you see there to the left of the...
It's sort of dead centre of the image.
Yeah.
It's difficult
to
really see much.
It's still, I mean, even now it's puffing up a bit more than it was a second ago, if you look carefully.
Yeah.
But it's up, it comes up, it goes down. The black smoke seems to have stopped for the most part. Now, if there are fire trucks there, we're not seeing it from here, but behind the trees there could be a lot of activity going on. We've only heard the sirens, that's the thing.
Yeah, the siren activity sort of stopped now, and I guess all the emergency services are on site now.
Well, I'm going to take a look at the control tower at the airport through the binoculars to see what we can see.
So somebody just asked what's happened. Well, you can't really tell from the image at the moment, but this is the site of an air show in the UK. And yeah, a Hawker Hunter jet's just crashed, which is a 50s era, very, you know, very prestigious jet, very historical jet. And it's crashed in a, it looks like, from what we know, it's actually quite a densely populated area. So it's near a main road, and it's crashed into several cars. So there's no word yet on casualties.
No, we were saying earlier there has been a crash here a couple of years ago of a hurricane.
And it's
on the hill you can see there on the image behind where this has happened, that hill crashed over there. The pilot steered it away from the crowd and he crashed into that hill, but he died sadly.
Yeah.
This time it went down onto the main road.
It went down onto the main road, crashed into several cars, and the police have declared it as a major incident.
Yeah.
Somebody's just asked if there's anything on radio about it on air traffic control. Well, unfortunately, we don't have access to it.
No, maybe someone on the internet can monitor this, who can
get into that. Yeah, I mean, I've actually got a scanning radio, but don't have it with me. Yeah.
No, okay. We can't do everything. We're just here on the spot. If you want to research more, maybe you're better equipped to do so than we are. I looked at the traffic tower there. Again, there was one person standing up inside it a minute ago. There was a big crowd for a while. It seems to have gone down. There's about two or three guys in there at the moment. We're hearing a helicopter now from our right. Don't know what that is. I'm going to try and have a look.
Well, that's, yeah, I can tell.
That's coming over here.
Yeah. It's a police helicopter.
It's a police helicopter. Okay. We were saying earlier, they really push these air shows now almost a spectacle and tragic for the pilot and the public. We also did wise with these old aircraft to really expect to up the stakes all the time and bring them so low.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we didn't actually see it.
We didn't see it, no, but it does worry me. I know I have always been concerned about that.
I do agree.
They do push these old craft a lot.
It's always great seeing vintage aircraft doing their thing, doing what they were designed to do. But yeah, it always makes you wonder if they're being pushed to their limits sometimes.
I've got the binoculars on this police helicopter. You may see the shot probably a bit high in that frame. Just take it up and watch.
Yeah, it's difficult to see.
Binoculars here. So I've got a yellow top on it, a dark blue lower part. It's just doing a circle of the scene by looking at it.
Well, there's actually two helicopters. There's an air evac helicopter, a medical evac helicopter that's just dropping down now.
Okay, I can see that. Yes, I've got that on the block. So it's white and blue.
Yeah.
And it's just descending very slowly behind the trees there. It's disappeared to your shot. But in the binoculars, I can see it's gone behind the trees there. So. The smoke seems to have stopped entirely now. There's a tiny bit I can see from it, but it's probably not visible to you at the moment.
Yeah, you know, just fingers crossed about the pilot. It's difficult at the moment. Yeah. I don't think there's been any news announcements yet about the state of the pilot, or obviously casualties on the ground, because at first we didn't realise that there were any casualties on the ground, which would have been the plane sort of crashed into a field, isolated field.
So probably you can't see it on the video image, but that hill, again, the weak field up above all this, is looking through the very powerful binoculars we've got by the camera. I can see tiny dots which are people sort of camped out, they're sitting out in this field, looking back in reverse direction towards us. So they're looking at this from another angle entirely. We don't know what they're making of it. Obviously they may or may not have as much knowledge as we have of this event, but that's a very popular viewing point to look at the air show without going into the air show as such, which is what we chose to do today, being outside of it.
I think we're gonna leave it there. I mean, it's quite a horrific scene, really. I mean,
there is an announcement now. We can't make out what it's
saying. Can't tell from.
No.
There is something on the megaphone across the other side of the river. But I guess we should pay homage to the pilot.
Absolutely. We don't know what the exact manoeuvre was then. He was trying, whether it was a low pass or whether it was just a dive. We couldn't run out. We don't know. So we were in a pub nearby. We thought it was a break in the flying. If anything, we were coming out.
It was the first flight, it was the first plane for like part two of the day's events, essentially. It was the after lunchtime 1:30 display, essentially. And it wasn't long into the display that the incident occurred. It was probably only a few minutes, actually.
I think so. It must have been, we just don't know. Probably someone did film it happening, I'm sure the air show did. Someone would have done, we didn't see it. We just had a very strange feeling coming out of the pub that there was this smoke, and I looked at it for a second. I thought, like I said, is it just some sort of fake smoke to make a fake bomb or something? You know, they do these fake scenarios and air shows, and there was white and black smoke together, and it seemed strange.
Yeah.
And then we gradually realised that I was looking across at this, and something definitely seemed to be wrong. And then when the smoke really puffed up a lot earlier, we could really see it was an incendiary type situation, not just a bit of thin smoke.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we're going to end the broadcast there, so
maybe watch the news or something, you'll hear more about this.
Yeah, I think it's a national story now, so. Okay, thank you very much for watching the broadcast.